That was from your first Jazz for Peace concert?
Well, the first Jazz for Peace concert, yeah, exactly. It was like about a month after 9/11. And I had recited the poem Jazz for Peace in a trio concert I did with Eddie and Lenny at mm-hmm. the Savannah Jazz Festival. Mm-hmm. And there was so much excitement surrounding this poem that they kept saying, you know, we would just be great if you could put that poem to music mm-hmm. in time for this concert that I had coming up with Paquito. Mm-hmm. So that concert came up and I had put the piece to music and we performed it at that concert of which that song is from.
Do we have a recording of that?
Of
the poem that you put to music?
Yes, on there is one of those numbers should be Jazz for Peace.
Oh, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Get it. We'll play that in a minute. But Gwen is threatening to leave. And
I have issues with that, Amy.
And I don't want you to go. But, you know, so we, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about, talk a lot about Jazz for Peace and the Democracy Toolkit Project, which is what Rick's concert Monday night is benefiting, correct?
Yes.
Yes. And we talked a little bit about this on Friday. And I kind of wanted to get back to that a little bit. And, you know, maybe for those people who were unable to catch the show on Friday, can you kind of recap a little bit about Democracy Toolkit?
Yeah, it's a project of Peace Jam, which is a wonderful organization that works with Nobel Peace Prize laureates and youth doing civic empowerment and peace studies and trainings. So this really grew out of the need for students to have access to the specific tools that it will take to create the change that's really needed now at the policy level, you know, at the working with elected officials level, not just doing community service and helping out needs, but to really look at what's creating those needs mm-hmm. and how do we engage as civic leaders, as citizens who care about these issues, what do we do about them? We're not taught this stuff in school. I've been training activists now for 10 years and you know, educated adults don't know how to do this stuff, what it takes to create policy change. How do you work with an elected official at whatever level it is?
Well, it seems to me that it's kind of there are two things. And one thing I mentioned yesterday after we were off the air, and one thing I was thinking about tonight, one thing is that it sounds to me like it's sort of a citizens' lobbying initiative.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, as citizens, we have the right and the privilege to lobby, mm-hmm. to influence our elected officials. That's mm-hmm. why we put them in office. They work for us. That's how it's supposed to work out. Mm-hmm. But if we don't use our voice, if we don't engage with them in a respectful and effective way, then we can't expect our democracy to work because that's the foundation of it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we aren't taught this stuff. So this is an effort to pilot a project using youth as advisors, 20 youth here in the Roaring Fork Valley, to start this project based on a curriculum that I've used for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And then to ramp it up nationally and to really look at, you know, how many youth we can reach. What will it take to get these tools into the hands of young people so that when they reach voting age, they're not just voting, but they're doing really what we need to be doing in our democracy, which is self-governing.
When you mention youth, how old are
high school kids? So mostly seniors, juniors and seniors, I'm thinking.
Just about voting age, maybe 17 years.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, do you think that this climate of this recent election has changed the way youth is approaching politics?
Well, I think they've been a lot more included than ever. They've been acknowledged for their power and for the need for them to be engaged. Never before have we reached out and engaged our youth in an election with the efforts that were undertaken in this last one. Mm-hmm. And it has really paid off. Youth have really stepped up and said, yes, we want a piece of this action. Yeah. And so this is really taking that energy and enthusiasm and giving it the wheels, you know, that it needs to really move.
It also, when you say this stuff isn't taught in school anymore, I think back to when there was such a thing as civics class.
Right.
Is this anywhere, any, is it
like Well, it
that?
Will include, you know, some of that, you know, the basics of how our government system is set up mm-hmm. to work, mm-hmm. How Congress works, how local government works, and what the what the responsibility of the citizen is in that process, because that's what's mainly been dropped out. We kind of understand that there's these three branches of government and, you know, whatever that looks like on the local level, mm-hmm. but we're not taught that the citizens have a piece in that. What is it that we need to be doing? Mm-hmm. What's available to us? Mm-hmm. There's a lot available to us as citizens of a democracy.
Well, lobbying,
and as broken as it is, it still works when we engage with it.
Oh, yeah. Engage is the operative word. And I think lobbying has become sort of a dirty word.
Well, because money has made it that, mm-hmm. as money makes many things when it gets to an extreme level, takes the... You know, the foundation of good right out of it. Mm-hmm. Now, lobbying is thought of mainly as that stereotype of big money influence, mm-hmm. where
exactly.
it's just a element of our democratic system that we all have access to as mm-hmm. citizens. Mm-hmm. And when we lobby, when we use our voices, we're very powerful with our elected officials because they respond to their constituents.
Is there another
word? They just don't hear from them very often.
Yeah, and so I guess the Democracy Toolkit is helping to raise a generation to understand that we can raise our voices. We're supposed to raise our voices.
Yes.
And citizens groups can do this. You don't have to be backed by millions and billions of dollars
right.
to have influence.
And it's not about being adversarial.
Okay.
It's about finding common ground and working respectfully, building a relationship built on trust and respect. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's sorely missing in our democratic process right now.
Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Well, it's a very adversarial arena. And again, money makes it so. It's very hard, given the way our system has evolved, for an elected official to stay in office without garnering big, huge pots of money. And it shouldn't be that way. Anybody on their own merit should be able to get into office, not because they have access to the big pots of money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when you take that out of it, it becomes less of the, you know, the gambling and the deal making and the yucky influence, and you get back to the art of negotiation, mm-hmm. the art of consensus, the mm-hmm. art of working together in communities mm-hmm. to effect change for the common good, not for who's got the most money.
Well, that sounds perfect. Do you think that's a little idealistic?
Well, I think you have to hold fast to the ideals because you will have to compromise along the way. But I think if we all can hold that, our democracy was set up to work on that ideal mm-hmm. with that very sacred vision.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the best that we can do is to keep training ourselves to get back there and to really practice it ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So this is sort of the vision that you try to lead these young people with.
Well, I'll give them examples of how it has worked. You know, there are certainly groups who are examples of how this does work. You know, what it takes to engage normal citizens in policymaking.
What would you say those groups are?
Well, certainly the one that I've worked with for 10 years, Results, that focuses on hunger and poverty
mm-hmm.
issues.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen, again, you know, amazing leaps forward in our policy to affect change in the amount of poverty in the world. We have the solutions. We have the resources. We know what to do. It, again, like anything else, just takes political will and the direction of those resources to where they can be used best for, again, the common good.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that legislators are open to this? I mean, that's kind of a dumb question or a weird question in light of the fact that we're supposed to be a democracy. But do you think legislators will listen to citizens who are lobbying in the ideal sort of way without billions of dollars.
You know, Amy, I've heard so many of them over the years speak. They've, you know, come to conferences and banquets of results that, and they thank us. They thank their constituents who have done the work of opening their eyes to issues that they knew nothing about, that they didn't know there were solutions to. And they thank these people, their constituents, for engaging with them with respect and with effectiveness, you know, not wasting their time, coming with clear direction and being willing to organize on behalf of these issues to garner that support so that their elected officials know that they have their constituents behind them. They thank us so profoundly for that. So I know that, you know, and I would bank on this, that it's not a minority of elected officials that have these feelings, mm-hmm. that all of them go into office with these ideals mm-hmm. and want democracy to work, mm-hmm. want to engage with their constituents. And it's we who haven't learned how to use our voices.
Yeah, we sort of haven't met them halfway. Maybe.
No, we haven't.
Because we've been focused on the consumer aspect.
Well, yeah. Our society has distracted us away from, you know, what our true... Mm-hmm. capabilities are.
And we've been called consumers instead of citizens.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's
really... We've been treated that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's up to us to change that around.
How did you connect with Rick Delarata?
Well, through his process of the Jazz for Peace organization, his volunteers found results first. Mm-hmm. And he came to do a benefit concert for Results in Denver. Mm-hmm. And I met him there. And when the Democracy Toolkit project started to develop, I called them back, and they said, sure, we'd love to support this.
Oh,
so
great.
Very feel very lucky.
Yeah, that fit perfectly with your mission. And Rick, can you just kind of recap a little bit about what the mission of Jazz for Peace is, for people who didn't catch us yesterday?
Sure. Well, you know, one thing that you saw one of the recent articles about Jazz for Peace is, you know, how they talk about helping those who are helping others. What we believe is that we could make this world so much of a better place if so many of the people that are helping others are in need of help at this time. And that's one of the most very difficult things that we're dealing with right now as a culture and even as a species, is that the people that are out there committed to making a positive influence in our world are themselves in need of help. Mm-hmm. So by identifying those people and helping them, we are able to help everyone that they are helping in this indirect way. Mm-hmm. You know, when we go and if we want to help someone who is working with the homeless or the hungry, you know, rather than us trying to go find someone who's hungry and giving him, you know, or doing a benefit concert for him, if we can find someone who's really dedicated to, you know, to serving these people and help them, you know, as we're doing here by helping someone who is really dedicating to empowering youth mm-hmm. to stand up and speak for themselves. Because if we can get the youth to stand up and speak, we will have an alternative, as I said earlier, to situations like these lobbying groups where they're going up and getting their voice heard without the people really getting heard too. Mm-hmm. And giving these politicians the opportunity to stop themselves from the destructive behavior of, you know, doing things for a special interest group against the people that they're serving. And this is one of the things that, one of the many things that can be halted by empowering youth. And it's so many things with us. I mean, for me, it's a free education because I get to see all of these people that are doing such wonderful things, mm-hmm. whether it's for the environment. You know, recently we were in Mexico helping an organization that was saving a coral reef and a turtle sanctuary.
Wonderful.
And, you know, we were excited to hear from them afterwards that, yes, you know, we have halted, at least temporarily, these hotels from coming in and putting in these, you know, hotels that would have destroyed the reef and stuff like that. So just it gives us an opportunity to do something with our music to really serve mankind, maybe wake some people up. Jazz is thought-provoking, as one of my CDs is titled. Mm-hmm. Actually, the first mm-hmm. CD I ever did with these musicians that you mentioned was called Thought-Provoking. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a foreshadowing to, you know, making some music that's thought-provoking, how about, you know, creating something with that music, an organization that makes people think?
I guess I'm wondering, well, before I ask you this, I think we should play another song. And I'd like to play Jazz for Peace.
Okay.
And that's the second cut off the Jazz for Peace CD, Rick Della Rata. And who's playing with you on this? Well, is it just you?
Actually, it's a bassist named Renee Hart, who played on my first and third CDs, the Take It or Leave It CD, and also a drummer from Vienna, Austria, named Vito Leschak, who was the European representative at our concert at the United Nations, which we brought together Israelis, Palestinians. We also had Asia and Europe and some other continents represented in that as well.
Great. Okay. Jazz for Peace.